The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Happy Friday, everyone, and welcome to Squawkbox. Here are your headlines today. U.S. equities plunge and Treasury yields spike as fresh data shows the U.S. economy growing at its slowest pace in almost 2 years. Tech earnings top expectations in extended trade, while Alphabet announces its first dividend as CEO Sundar Pichai touts the next wave of AI innovation.
We are encouraged that we are seeing an increase in search usage among people who use the new AI overviews, as well as increased user satisfaction with the results.
Now, the Bank of Japan holds rates and the yen hits a fresh 34-year low, keeping traders on edge. There it is, 156. That edge comes over whether policymakers may indeed intervene. The governor, Kazuo Ueda, speaks at 8:30 CET. And Airbus reaffirming its outlook and backing its higher delivery goals, ramping up production of its A350 fleet as it looks to extend a lead over rival Boeing.
If you look at our order intake for Q1, which was 170 units, almost half of that came from the A350, so very, very strong order intake. And that momentum we see to continue.
BHP shares struggle on their return to trade in Sydney as reports emerge that Anglo American is unimpressed by the mining giant's takeover offer. It was a big day for markets yesterday. We had a lot really on the front of inflation, GDP, tech earnings crossing. The big focus, though, when it came to the economy was that the U.S. economy grew much less than expected in the first quarter, notching a bump of only 1.6% on the year, less than half of the fourth quarter figure, and almost a 4 percentage point lower than forecast. This is advanced core PCE data for the period came in hotter than expected at 3.7% versus the 3.4% forecast. That's the gauge's biggest advance in a year. Let's take a look at some of the US market reaction as a result. The data points, don't forget the investors have been closely watching what they're hearing from the Fed members. A lot more hawkish commentary and question mark around the type of landing we're going to get this year and just what that interest rate story looks like. In many ways, the slower growth story disappointing for those, particularly given the resilience we've seen in the consumer, seen as the real cushion for the economy. Some of that growth leg falling away yesterday, not as strong as anticipated, and then the negative effects, the fact that inflation is still high, suggesting that it might limit the ability of the Fed to cut rates anytime soon. So just limiting those policy action tools. In terms of the other side of the story yesterday, big moves for the markets too in reaction to Meta. We saw the numbers crossing a day earlier, and the big story really was around the capital expenditure required to power AI for Meta. After the bell, of course, a lot of news too coming through from other big rivals in the AI space, being Microsoft and Alphabet. Those stocks you could see weaker in session, but a lot of moves after hours after what we saw from both companies. So it was somewhat of a choppy session to try to get through. But Meta, as you could see, that undercurrent from the stock having an impact down 10.5%. But we did see some support, some prop coming through from the semiconductors. Nvidia, for instance, one of the big moving names for the S&P and for the NASDAQ. In terms of treasury markets, not able to see its way through that data yesterday, and you can see as a result we ticked higher on some of these yields, just shy of the 5% handle at the short end. You can see very much on the cusp of that level, 4.69, so just shy of 4.7 on the 10-year. To U.S. futures today, what's in store in reaction to all the numbers we had overnight? And of course, blockbuster numbers I'll run you through, but in the green at this point. It does look like we're looking for a resumption to some of the appetite to the upside. Don't forget that the narrative a day earlier was that, look, we've got Meta. It wants to be a major player in AI, but it's going to cost Meta and shareholders a lot of money on CapEx. That narrative around soaring costs derailing some confidence, but I think it came back yesterday thanks to what we saw from Alphabet and Microsoft. So the latest Alphabet shares are surging in extended trade on first quarter results. Earnings and revenue both topped expectations, with the latter up 15% on the year, its fastest pace of growth since early 2022. The Google parent announced its first ever dividend alongside the results and increased its share buyback program by $70 billion. CEO Sundar Pichai looked to combat concerns that generative AI would eat into Google's search dominance, telling investors the company's AI products are boosting its search business.
We have already served billions of queries with our generative AI features. It's enabling people to access new information, to ask questions in new ways, and to ask more complex questions. Most notably, based on our testing, we are encouraged that we are seeing an increase in search usage among people who use the new AI overviews, as well as increased user satisfaction with the results.
Microsoft also beat on the top and bottom line in the fiscal third quarter, with growth in its cloud unit continuing to accelerate. Cloud revenue grew just over 20% to $26.7 billion, with a 7% of growth in that cloud services attributed by AI. Now, the CFO, Amy Hood, has said the company expects CapEx to move higher next year, with AI demand currently higher than available capacity. The CEO, Satya Nadella, has said that Microsoft is seeing strong growth in its artificial intelligence products.
Our AI innovation continues to build on our strategic partnership with OpenAI. More than 65% of the Fortune 500 now use Azure OpenAI service. All up, the number of Azure AI customers continues to grow and average spend continues to increase.
Inge Heydorn joins us now, public fund manager GP Bullhound. Inge, thank you very much for joining us. We did hear from Alphabet and Microsoft that they are still spending money on CapEx, that the AI cycle is also going to require deep investments from these two companies. But the backdrop in terms of the revenue, the monetization they're seeing at this point from both AI and other parts of the business seem to overshadow some of the concerns that were around the markets yesterday with Meta, a dividend too, not doing anything to damage confidence. So just weigh in on where you think investors now sit around these major stocks in the tech universe.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We're all seeing the hardware sales coming through for AI for a long time with NVIDIA. And we have been worried about the monetization on AI on the second leg, so the software. But I think, as you said, both Microsoft and Google set that a little bit at rest now. And even with SAP and ServiceNow yesterday, both were highlighting that the demand for the AI products were very, very strong. So it seems like we're now seeing some of that coming through. And the number of players building models and starting to realize the monetization of it now is really becoming less of a fair, to be honest.
Potentially sorting out some players from other players in this AI story. I want to get to Alphabet specifically because we did see the increase in the stock market value of the company by $300 billion to over $2 trillion. Some of this, you've got to say, down to the returns to shareholders now in the form of the dividend and the share buyback. How do we think about that change in the payout policy? Because in the past, when we thought about, say, the likes of Apple, that it had a truckload of cash, it had a problem getting rid of the cash, had to do something with it. Is it the same story this time round for Alphabet when we've got huge disruption, huge demands on that cash?
Yes, it is, because look at their top line. The top line of these guys are growing 20, 30% across the board, operating income a little bit more. So even if they increase the CapEx, the cash flow levels in these companies are, they're generating is very, very strong. So their confidence on releasing a dividend and also buying back shares is very, very high. And as you also can see on the guidance from Microsoft, for example, they are guiding for double-digit growth also in 2025. So the winners on the AI race for the moment is the big guys which can spend money, where the cost of capital is relatively low to relative to the rest of the market. So they are definitely gaining share across the board.
Yeah, Inge, explain something to me then. Meta says they're going to spend a whole host of money in order to ensure that they ramp up their AI capabilities then, right? And Microsoft and Apple ultimately say the same thing. Why is there a divergence in how both these stocks are viewed when one can tell that even Meta has actually done well so far with their AI expansion as well?
Yeah, I think, and even Tesla, remember Tesla spent $1 billion on AI and increased their forecast on AI spending on creating really computers in the cars. So I think the difference here is between the Meta and especially Microsoft is the fact that you can see how Microsoft is going to monetize the product outside the internal efficiencies they're driving by AI. While in Facebook Meta, you can see how they're benefiting on it internally, but how they're going to externally make money on it, that's the thing that the market really don't really understand yet. We can see them spending the money, but we have a hard time to see really how will they monetize it outside their own product space.
Yeah, getting to monetize it is actually the real rubber hitting the road, as it were, then. When you take a look at the likes of, now you only have Amazon and I think Tesla, the only ones then not giving out a dividend, does this create a slightly different space then? Does it broaden the investor base, you think, for these tech companies now?
Absolutely, it does. And also, bear in mind also, given the fact that they are paying these dividends, is that they have a very, very hard time to continue to acquire companies, because as you know, the regulators have been much, much tougher for these guys now to continue to buy other companies. So I think that is another explanation to why they can also start paying dividend, because I think most of these guys know that they're going to be having a hard time to acquiring companies with the cash.
Ingo, I want to just zero in on the cloud business at this point, because over the last number of years, we've seen enormous competition. We've seen all different offerings from hybrid to public to private cloud, big players, small players. But is the game now changing around the AI offerings where, for the first time, you've now got companies thinking, well, who do I want the cloud to be with because of the AI offering, the AI expertise? And because in the numbers yesterday, what, 28% growth in the cloud for Google Cloud. We saw on the Azure business up 31%. Microsoft's Intelligent Cloud Unit, $26.7 billion in terms of revenue. Are we now seeing a stampede towards these bigger players that have AI as well?
I think in general is that the end client starts to understand that they need to work with all their data if they're going to use it for anything. And if you look at the SAP numbers, you saw the same trend there. They had an increase in speed of migration from on-premises to cloud due to the AI. And I think it's in general, if you want to use AI in fully in your company, you need to utilize all the data. And it's an easiest way to collect all the data is in the cloud. So I think that's definitely helping the cloud players winning over a lot of new flows of data into the cloud.
Inga, appreciate it. There's still so much to really get through when it comes to these numbers and really this industry as a whole. So hopefully we'll get you on again to unpack this a little bit more. Inga Haydon, the public fund manager at GP Bullhound. I mean, there's still so much in this, right? And just even hearing Dan Ives again, of course, a bull in this space as well. Really just saying it's a get out your popcorn type of moment really for these companies, because with that investment in AI that we've continuously been speaking about, the rubber is hitting the road, it seems, and some are still saying there's still more to get out of this. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see it.
Yeah, and I mean, one point that jumps out to me is around CapEx. How do we think about the runway? We've had Meta ramping up at this point, saying almost like you build a stadium first and then you fill it with the spectators. Mm. As we talk about the monetization, you can't get the spectators in until you build something. But it feels like the others have been building it, quickly monetizing it. Yeah. So as soon as they build one new arm in the stadium, they put the spectators in when they monetize. Yeah. So it's sort of a different strategy, and it's hard to know what comes next in terms of how much more is required. We know there is a buy the chips, train up the models, and then embark upon buying inferencing chips as you then crunch the data. But what comes next, and how much of an extra runway is required if there's more scale, even beyond what we expect?
I don't think anybody knows what is the right way to go about it, right? And it's just about hopefully making it work as it comes out right now. So we'll see. We'll certainly see how things are faring. But here's a stock that didn't necessarily do well on the back of this AI and this chip boom, and perhaps one that some would consider that it should be. Intel shares sinking in extended trade. That's after revenue came in just short of expectations at $12.7 billion. And its second quarter non-GAAP earnings forecast disappointed. It was less than half of what analysts had even hoped for at 10 cents per share. Now, the CEO, Pat Gelsinger, told CNBC he's confident on the second half of the year.
second half is going to be better because we'll have worked through those inventory positions in the first half. So we have a very good handle on where we are with inventories. We're seeing market improvements. We're getting that signal from all of our channel and OEM partners. So we feel quite comfortable that the inventory position is healthy as we look to a stronger second half of the year and into 25.
Yeah, many question marks with regards to their company as well, government contracts as well, etc. So perhaps looking like they should have been doing well. Nonetheless, Snap is surging after the bell after issuing a bullish outlook for the second quarter, with sales expected to rise as much as 18%. That's above what analysts had penciled in. This on the back of $1.2 billion in first quarter sales, up by more than a fifth on the year. Now, our U.S. colleagues will speak to the CEO, that's Evan Spielberg, at 5 o'clock CET today. Don't miss that exclusive conversation on Money Movers with Evan Spiegel.
We've been on Japan Watch today. I'm not going to call it BOJ Watch, but we've been watching the central bank's actions when it comes to any moves that could prop up the dollar-yen rate and also what it means for JGB. So the Bank of Japan has kept rates on hold in line with expectations. It expects inflation to stay near its 2% target in the next 3 years. The central bank also said it will continue to conduct bond purchases in line with the March decision. There were no comments on the yen, which has steadily weakened since the BOJ ended its negative interest rate policy last month and abolished its yield curve control program. We're going to bring you more from the Bank of Japan as policymakers address the media later in the show.
Now coming up, Airbus sticking to its full-year outlook, and that's despite what has been a turbulent first quarter. After operating profit comes in weaker than expected, so we'll unpack that one. Plus, we'll bring you the latest on BHP's attempt to snap up Anglo American. A whole lot of analysis on this one, the market reaction from Australia, back from holiday. What has that stock done? And don't miss our exclusive interview then with the core CFO, that's Martin Giraud, as the French hospitality group notches a 8% boost to first quarter revenue. That's coming up in around 15 minutes time.
Listen to CNBC's Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the biggest tech news from across the globe. Join me, Arjun Karpal.
And me, Tom Chitty, every week as we bring you insights into the top stories, unpack the latest trends, and find out where the industry is headed.
Now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
Airbus has posted a miss on its first quarter operating profit, down 25% on the year at 577 million euros. However, the plane maker is sticking to its guidance for the year and is raising its A350 production target. Charlotte is here with more. Charlotte, I wonder how price sensitive this stock is given all the problems over at Boeing. So even if we have some bad news, what sort of support is already under this stock?
No, absolutely. At the same time, and I've been saying this a lot, you know, it gives them a lot of humidity and it kind of brings a bit of issues to the whole ecosystem, the problems at Boeing, because it does impact a lot of suppliers for them as well. So, but interesting to see those numbers. They are delivering more planes, 142 planes delivered in the first quarter. That's up 12% compared to last year. Net profit up 28%. But as you were saying in the introduction there, the key profitability metric, adjusted EBIT before M&A and taxes, down 25%. That's because they have had a cash out flow of 1.8 billion euros because they are building inventory for that production ramp up. Because here again, they have the demand, those airlines want those planes. The problem for them is to actually get those planes out fast enough and with the quality control, of course, that need to be in place. And there's extra pressure on this front, of course, since the incident with Boeing. So they have reconfirmed that they're planning to deliver around 800 planes for this year. They delivered 735 last year. They reconfirmed their production ramp up of 75 A320 by the year 2026. They're producing about 55 a month at the moment. So they have to work with all these myriad of small suppliers there to try and work that production ramp up. And the management yesterday saying it's still a difficult environment, for the supply chain, it's still extremely difficult for them. But you were saying one new target that they have changed is for their wide body plane, the A350. They plan to produce 12 by 28. So here again, this is seen as a clear sign that they are benefiting from the issues at Boeing. And certainly we saw that Indigo big order coming in yesterday for as much as 100 A320 there. So another big order from India for Airbus. So I had a chance to catch up with the CFO of Airbus, Thomas Toffer, to talk about the supply chain and how things were looking going forward.
I would say it's clearly a reflection of the very strong commercial momentum that we see for the A350. If you look at our order intake for Q1, which was 170 units, almost half of that came from the A350, so very, very strong order intake. And that momentum we see to continue. And that is why we took the decision that we want to, as you correctly said, increase the rate and now targeting rate 12 by 2028 for the A350.
And you reconfirmed those target production for 26. But I want to ask you, you still say that this is a very complicated environment for the supply chain. So can you just give us a little bit of color there on how difficult things are and whether do you expect them to improve in 24 at all?
Well, clearly, we would say that the environment has not improved in the recent months. So the supply chain remains complicated and is certainly a pacing element for our ramp up. And it's really broad based. So it's not that it's only one piece of equipment that is missing, but we have our team very broadly talking to the supply chain, not only to the tier one suppliers, but also to tier two, tier three, so that we can detect issues as early as possible and address them. But it is definitely true that the supply chain remains the bottleneck for 2024 and has not gotten easier in the last 2 months.
And are the issues at your competitor here again actually bringing more uncertainty for some of the suppliers and potentially making things more difficult for you as well?
I would say this is in fact the case. So we usually get the question whether the issues that Boeing is having are helping us. And I consistently said it's not helpful for the industry and therefore it's not helpful for Airbus. And what you mentioned is exactly one of the symptoms that we're seeing. It is putting additional pressure and repercussions in the supply chain and to some individual suppliers. And that is also what we are feeling, that it is not helpful for the ramp up of the entire industry and also of Airbus.
And one of the suppliers that they're working with as well is Spirit AeroSystems. Of course, that's the supplier that was involved with that door panel that blew in the Alaska Airlines. Boeing said they're planning on potentially buying that supplier when they try to tighten their supply chain there. So that would have an impact on Airbus because they are producing pieces for them as well. So they say they are having constructive discussions with Spirit AeroSystems to potentially buy the parts of that business that supply them. But again, we see that the problems at Boeing on paper, it looks, this is great news for Airbus, but actually it does disrupt the whole ecosystem there for those plane manufacturers. Well, there's such big demand out there. They have a backlog of 8,600 planes there. There is a lot of demand. They have 10 years of production ahead. But the problem for them is getting those planes out fast enough and safely enough.
800 planes, you said, is the delivery basis for this year.
The target
right.
for this year,
that takes
yes.
them to 2018 levels. 2017, they delivered 718 planes. 800 in 2018. Mm. 2019, 863.
And that was the record, 2019. 100%,
right? So that's a significant ramp up that they're actually aiming for. And they're saying that they're pretty much back at pre-COVID levels. I mean, record territories is a different
sphere. Yeah, they're hoping this year will be that level and that maybe next year that would bring them back to the record level of 2019. But again, it's difficult for them because of the whole supply chain issues.
But we're saying that travel is supposed to ramp up. It hasn't actually ramped up. So are they trying to create the demand for a ramping up in travel, or is it the other way around in the sense that consumers are actually back and they're just trying to meet that demand? Mm.
No, consumers are back and airlines are renewing their fleet, more fuel-efficient fleet as well. And a lot of them are ordering these planes. We had a lot of big mega orders last year after COVID. But certainly here again, it's just getting some of those planes. Some of the American airlines having delays of some of those Boeing planes not coming in. So they're trying to lease some planes from Airbus as well. So there's a whole kind of musical chair here going on.
I've just gone down a bunny hole of the A350 versus the 787. Apparently the size is bigger for the A350. Also working on those long-range change ambitions for, you know, the ultra long haul flights? And obviously, coming from Australia, this is something that we look at because you want to get from point to point without stopping somewhere. You want to get there quickly. Mm. Charlotte, thank you very much. We're going to segue over to the airline industry from a different lens. As the US low-cost carrier Southwest Airlines says production issues at Boeing will force its costs to rise and revenue to grow slower than expected. The company also said it will receive just 20 new planes from Boeing this year, less than half its estimate last month. Shares closed almost 8% in the red. Southwest CEO Bob Jordan told CNBC that production delays at Boeing are being felt across the industry.
We support Boeing taking the time to fix their issues, become a better company, because that is good for Southwest Airlines and the country long term. But there's no doubt this is a significant issue. Replanning, adjusting schedules for our customers. And yeah, we're significantly down from our originally planned deliveries.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market moving news, you can head to CNBC.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.